Hey, welcome listeners. Here's another Escape from Plan A episode for you. I'm hosting tonight, Chris. I'm here with Liza. Hey, Liza.
Hey.
Tonight, just the two of us. I just want to thank Teen and the D-Gens. They've been holding the fort for the last few weeks. I think in the last episode, Teen said that I had said that since Everything Everywhere All at Once won Best Picture and all those Oscars, we kind of just ran out of stuff to talk about. And in that, yeah, there's some truth to that because a lot of Plan A was talking about media criticism, but you know, we criticize Everything Everywhere All at Once. A lot of us are not big fans of the movie, but can't deny that a big part of Asian America really wanted media representation. And now that we have it, what the hell do we have to talk about anymore? At least in this old mindset, right? So, but I think we're here to talk about Beef, which is the new Netflix series I dropped. I think has it been a couple of weeks, Liza? Like what?
It's been about 2 or 3 weeks.
Right. And
I started watching it a week after it came out because everyone just kept telling me it was really good and I had no idea what it was about. So, I mean, I heard about it like a month before, which wasn't really on my radar. So I didn't even realize it was a series. And that's what initially turned me off. But I'm glad that I watched it.
Yeah. When you told me to watch it and it's a series, because you first, because I thought it was a movie actually, because I had heard of it a while back.
I thought it was a movie too. Mm-hmm.
And then I was like, oh, it's a series. And you initially said, oh, then I'm out. But then you watch it and you told me you have to watch it. I knew it had to be good because
yeah, this is a show that was not on my radar because it's a series. And I had no idea what I was getting into when I began watching. I thought it was going to, because Ali Wong is in it, I thought it was going to be another rom-com. And then
I thought it was so funny when you said that.
And also because it was called Beef, I thought that one of them was going to be playing a chef again. So I thought it was going to be like another Always Be My Maybe. Yeah. So she's imagine my run pleasant surprise when I watched episode one.
I could totally be being a movie where she heads like the first all-female staff at like some old boys network type of steakhouse, like a Keen's or like a Peter Luger's in New York. And hey, I'm sure there's a script like that flying around somewhere. But you must have seen it. And your expectation would have just been like, what the hell, right? If that's what you're expecting.
This is a show that this is a show that people will be talking about not just for the next week or two, but probably years to come.
Yeah, and what I said about Everything Everywhere All at Once, for better or for worse, marking the end of a Asian American arc that was, you know, very obsessed with media representation and all that, you really can't do much better than basically batting 100 at the Oscars. So if that arc's ended and we're looking to Asian American culture, I think what compelled us to pot about Beef is that it's the first time I felt in a long time where I thought there's something new on the horizon. It's no longer just Asian Americans saying, when I was a little boy or girl, I wanted to have the Asian American version of some 90s artifact or even 80s artifact. But this seems like something. It's not even that new though, because it's really picking up the spirit of Better Luck Tomorrow, which came out like 20 years ago. And
this is better though.
I mean, like, I haven't really weighed them against each other, especially since, you know, one's a movie and one's a series. But for whatever reason, nobody touched this type of Asian American narrative for 20 years.
Yeah, I seriously thought that with Everything Everywhere All at Once winning at the Oscars, I thought that the natural progression was going to be like, all Asian Pride and Prejudice, or like, I don't know, just start race bending all of the European stuff, but sticking Asian people in it, you know, like what they're doing with Bridgerton and like Little Mermaid.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was going to be where the next step was. So, I mean, it still could be, but if we go in this direction, I'm much more supportive if this is the direction that it goes in.
Right. And, you know, I've been like talking to some of my like, you know, Asian American friends we have, especially the ones who met through Plan A. And I think for a long time, I think this is what people have been wanting, even if they didn't really know it.
Yeah, I just want a good story.
Want a good story, the one that's not so worried about outward presentation and actually is more in the spirit of things we see coming out of Asia.
Being heroes.
Yeah, yeah. And the creator of this, Lee Sung-jin, I've been really trying to dig up his bio because I'm just curious about his background.
I don't know anything else he's done. This is probably his biggest project because I've
never heard of him before. He only has a couple of credits before. I think one of them is that anime show Toucan Birdie, which I didn't see, but I heard it was really good. And maybe a short film here and there. Nothing, but this is definitely his biggest project. Mm-hmm. But he was born in Korea, which I think is an important part of his biography. It's probably why he's not so mired in that pathetic Asian American mindset. Yeah. I don't know when he immigrated, but I'm guessing he has enough ties to Korea that, you know, he doesn't end up like a lot of the Asian Americans we know. And he's not young. I think he's
no
like 41.
Stranger to Asian American culture, though.
Right.
It seems
I'm
like
guessing
he knows his way around based on the subtext that we're given in the show.
Oh, for sure. I'm guessing he probably immigrated. I'm going to say probably in
college,
like late elementary school, actually, I was going to say.
Oh, that early? Like,
well, I heard, I didn't see many interviews, but I heard him talk. Okay. He doesn't really talk with an accent. So I'm guessing he's like 1.5 gen.
Okay.
All right.
Elementary school then. We'll put it there.
Yeah. That's just my rough guess. But as I said, he's not like some young guy. He's 41 from what I can tell. So
how old are the Daniels?
They're about in the mid 30s.
Okay.
I think Daniel Kwan's like 34, 35. Mm-hmm. I think it was he and I were born the same year. So this has this like Asian spirit, like Asian spirit, not Asian American spirit, which I think is why a lot of people find this refreshing.
Well, it is Southern California.
Right. But even in that, like, I mean, like, you know, Wang Fu is Southern Californian, but it's like, we don't get this sense from it, right? It's this, you know,
they existed.
Yeah. It's that violent rage of Asia that comes through finally in an Asian American work, which we hadn't seen really since Better Luck Tomorrow, which was an anomaly as it is. But I'm very happy to see it here, and I'm excited.
Why does this remind you so much of Better Luck Tomorrow?
Because it's set in the same area, you know, Southern California. It involves these Asian American social circles. You know, they're not just, you know, an Asian American who is in non-Asian circles. These take, especially into Danny's world, you get a glimpse into that whole like kind of Koreatown type of crowd.
Is it the tone too? Because it just gets so dark.
Yeah, and the whole just, you know, especially with like the Amy Lau character played by Ali Wong, you know, the outwardly respectable, presentable Asian American having a very dark side is very Better Luck Tomorrow. All right, so why don't we just delve right into episode one and just kind of do a episode by episode run through, right. And then we can throw in our commentary as we go. So okay, so the show starts with Danny, who's played by Steven Yeun. He's at like a Lowe's or Home Depot dropping off DC Bocce
grills.
It's called
Forster's in the show.
Oh, right,
but
yeah.
Yeah, it's a home improvement chain of stores that I think is based off of Lowe's.
Mm-hmm. And trying to return these hibachi grills, and we're like, okay, he's probably up to something. We don't quite know what it is. And then, you know, he doesn't get a return. They don't accept his returns. He's already kind of like pissed off. And then as he's trying to pull out of the driveway, he almost crashes into this white BMW. I think it's a Mercedes or whatever.
Mm-hmm. It's a Mercedes
SUV
truck.
Yeah. And, you know, there's a big contrast right away because there's the white Mercedes SUV versus his red beat up dusty pickup truck.
Yeah.
And then they, you know,
we don't see the driver in the white Mercedes, but they start honking their horn like crazy, he flips them off and they start screaming. And then he starts chasing the white Mercedes and they go into, they chase each other through a bunch of fancy suburban LA neighborhoods.
Mm-hmm.
And then that road rage incident becomes all consuming to these two characters. And over the course of the next 2 years, they drag their friends and their families into their destruction.
Talk
about obsession and revenge. This is a dark comedy that is all about actions and consequences.
Yeah. And I think action is the key word. Cause like the first real, within the first 5 minutes, you get a very exciting car chase.
Yeah.
And you contrast that with, you know, your typical Asian American work, which is all about identity or your relationship with your parents and stuff like that.
It's not until the white Mercedes pulls into a beautiful, expensive home in Calabasas that we finally see the driver, and it's Ali Wong.
Right. All right. So let's talk about these two characters. Let's start off with Danny. Danny is played by Steven Yeun. He's a contractor. I don't think he ever went to college.
He owns like a struggling contracting business called Accho Service, because his name is Danny Cho.
Yes.
It's a little corny.
Mm-hmm.
But that just shows that he's not the most clever guy when it comes to business.
Yeah, and he's like solidly like blue collar, working class. I mean, we later find out he didn't go to college. He lives in this very depressing apartment that looks like a motel with his younger brother, Paul, whom we can talk about later. His parents had to go back to Korea because their family business was a motel, but it closed. And then we get hints, they drop hints that there was some kind of police raid because of this no good cousin of theirs whom we'll meet later. So, you know, he's just struggling to get by. He has this brother who is kind of like this gamer, Bitcoin hustler, fuckboy kind of guy. Yeah. And Danny is trying to play both these roles as older brother, but also parent. And what did you think of Danny as a character? I mean, without going too far ahead into the plot, just like overall, when you watch like the first two episodes, what are your impressions of him?
He's a very broken character.
Yeah, I mean, I get the sense.
He tries earnestly, but he's just so broken and he's not that clever.
Right. And I get the sense that he's the type of person who is because a lot of his life is filled with disappointments, he's a type who will willingly take sacrifices in the thought that he's doing a greater good to the people around him, even though they don't particularly want it, because it's kind of like the only thing he has left. It's like, okay, so I didn't go to college. I have this crappy job. I get no time to myself. He's not in a relationship or, you know, dating around or anything. He has nothing. So at least he has suffering, and he wants that suffering to mean something. So, you know, he'll tell Paul, you know, I do all this stuff for you. And then we'll find out later that he's actually been a extremely detrimental force to Paul's life.
So what we're describing sounds really dark, but it's actually very funny. Without the comedy, it would be so tragic. And thank God for the comedy, because I thought the writing was good. And I actually laughed out loud a bunch of times, which I don't usually do.
Yeah, and I thought one of the funniest things is the Danny and Paul's relationship. Because I could relate. I mean, my relationship to my brother is very different from Danny to Paul. But I am.
What's the age difference between you and your brother?
Just 1 year.
Whoa.
And I thought
you guys were way further apart.
No, we're just 1 year. And I mean, this show kind of doesn't know its own timeline, but Danny's supposed to be...
I was thinking about that. So let me just get this out of the way, just so we can... I don't understand when this is supposed to take place. It has a nearly all 90s soundtrack, but then they're using iPhones and talking about cryptocurrency. What is the age difference between Danny and Paul? Like, they say it's 3 years, but Danny keeps referring to Paul as a child and a minor. Meanwhile, Danny himself has to be in his mid to late 30s. And then there's the issue about Paul applying for college using paper applications, which nobody has done since the 90s.
Yes,
and just like the car models, the car that Danny drives could easily be from the early 2000s or the 90s. But Amy's car is a new model Mercedes truck.
I mean, this is clearly sometime in the 2010s at least. You know, this is people have Instagram and things like that. So, you know, let's just say it's 2015, give or take 3 years. It wouldn't make a whole lot of difference, I think.
Well, that still doesn't answer the age difference between Danny and Paul.
Right. And Danny saying to Paul, you're just a child. We could take that as a figure of speech, even minor. That could just be, you know, big bro trying to talk down to little bro. But
even
officially,
if they're 3 years apart, though, they seem way further apart in age.
Right. So the thing that doesn't quite make sense is we know they're 3 years apart because
Danny seems more like an uncle figure than just being 3 years older.
Right, because in a later episode, I think it's like episode 8, when you get to see them when they were little kids.
They're the same age, practically.
Well, little Danny says to little Paul, like, you know, like, I'll just, you know, 3 years, like, if I just stay out of school for like 3 years or something, we can graduate at the same time and we can go to school together. So we know it's 3 years, but yes. Danny also makes, when he's talking to Isaac, who's the cousin, played by David Cho, they talk about like Johnny Carson being their comedy idol. I'm like, what the hell? Like, okay, let's say that
Danny, when was the last time Johnny Carson was on TV?
Right. Like, Liza, you don't remember Johnny Carson, right? Like, wasn't he dead even, like, because you're not that much older than me, like, but you know, I mean, Johnny Carson wasn't around.
I mean, by the time, I mean, if these characters are supposed to be around our age, wouldn't it be more like a Letterman or something?
Yeah, exactly. Like Johnny Carson, I thought, was like retired in the 70s or whatever.
Maybe if you wanted to go really old, it would still be something, Arsenio Hall, maybe.
Right, right. That I found very bizarre. I could see like Isaac being older because
maybe this is what happens when you have, what's the director's name again?
Lee Sung-jin.
Yeah.
But he's also like 41. He doesn't remember Carson unless he watched like old bootleg tapes from.
Maybe he did. I don't know.
Yeah, but you mentioned the soundtrack. What did you think of the soundtrack? It was very late 90s, early 2000s.
I did not like the soundtrack in all the earlier episodes. But then when you get to episode 9 and 10, Bjork's All Is Full of Love. That's one of my favorite Bjork songs. And then Smashing Pumpkins Mayonnaise. That's one of my favorite Smashing Pumpkins songs.
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever, do you know the song Bjork, All Is Full of Love? Have you ever seen her do it live?
I don't know any Bjork songs. And outside of like Melancholy and the Infinite Sadness, I don't know much about Smashing Pumpkins songs.
Well, Smashing Pumpkins Mayonnaise comes from their best album.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The one with the Siamese twins on the cover.
Yeah.
You're and right. Bjork's All Is Full of Love is from her, it's from one of her earlier albums. I think it's 95's Post, but that song is so good. That is right. you got to YouTube some of the live performances. She's such a good singer.
All right. Because I wasn't a fan of the soundtrack because I...
Well, the Hoobastank and the Bush songs in the early episodes, they suck.
That song, but the reason by Hoobastank, one of the worst songs ever written. I hated it when it came out.
It's the end of episode one. I thought it was a bit though, because the scene
it's a meme song.
It
should be a meme song.
Is really funny,
right? And it's but still, like, I don't want to hear that song ever. So
it's
bad.
It's actually a perfect choice, even though the song sucks. It's called "The Reason," and Amy Lau is chasing Danny down the street because he just took a piss in her bathroom, and he's laughing all the way to his car. She never catches up to him, and the song "Hoobastank," "The Reason," is playing, and it actually works. It works very well, even if you hate the song. It's cheesy. It's corny.
But it's making
light of the situation that we don't realize is going to get so dark around episodes 8, 9, and 10.
I just have this.
You don't realize just how destructive these two are going to get.
Right, but I just have this big aversion to any like conspicuous nostalgia by songs of that era. I'm talking like late 90s to early 2000s.
Well, it's not like the You Smells Like Teen Spirit.
Right, but that's more like early 90s. I'm talking more like, you know, like pop punk or emo or
like Bush, Mastermind.
Or teen pop, the 90s kind of teen pop thing. I think it's because I know that era too well. So I know when they're cherry picking too much.
Was Hoobastank in the 90s actually?
No, it was like early 2000s.
Yeah,
I would guess maybe 2002, 2003.
I think Hoobastank was like the... What a terrible time for music.
That was not a good time for culture in general.
That's where they're living, so, you know.
but you brought up a good point. Like, if the setting isn't kind of like the 2010s, like, why is the music from that era... And maybe it has to do with Danny's.
I am forgiving of Bjork and Smashing Pumpkins. I am kind of forgiving about the corniness of Hoobastank, but Bush, I don't like Bush. And then I don't even remember the other songs in the other episodes.
Right. I'm guessing it reflects the subjectivity of Danny and Amy, because they're both around 40-ish. I mean, I think that's actually Steven Yeun and Ali Wong's actual age. So yeah, maybe from their character's point of view, it'll be all from their music. But I like music from that era because that's kind of my adolescence. But I don't like it when it's used this way, because often it's just, I think,
too ham-fisted.
You know, kind of like if there's like a...
So you think that Bjork's All Is Full of Love and Smashing Pumpkins Mayonnaise was ham-fisted though?
Well, I didn't even recognize those songs. I didn't even listen to them. But the other songs, I can't think of them off the top of my head. But I recognize them, like, oh, okay, so this is probably some older millennial or young Gen X guy.
Well, he is
like,
older millennial. He's 41.
Right. So it's kind of like, let's say you grew up in the 60s and you watch a 60s movie. And of course, they're going to play The Birds. They're going to play The Zombies. You're like, oh, God. Like everyone knows those songs. Like, go a little deeper, please. I would appreciate it if he played some songs that were a little bit less known. But it's just like, I've heard these songs too many times before. So anyway, we're getting off a bit off track. So
That's tangential. Let's go for the characters. We're at episode two and three now. Let's talk about the other characters that have already.
Let's talk about the Ali Wong character. What do you think of Amy?
Amy is a horrible person. She's very broken. She is Danny's soulmate. But
the interesting thing, though, is that she was never actually supposed to be an Asian woman. She was supposed to be a middle-aged white dude. In fact, I think I read the name Stanley Tucci being thrown around as maybe somebody whom the part was written for. So
I can see him doing this, but I think it works better with Amy, with Ali Wong.
I think she played the character very well.
I find Stanley Tucci to be too sympathetic, and I find Ali Wong very unsympathetic. Anyway, so Ali Wong's character, Amy, she is the breadwinner of her family. She's the entrepreneur of this new agey houseplant business. And throughout the series, she's looking to get acquired by that same home improvement store called Forster's. Mm-hmm. And she's very tightly wound and stressed out. She's married to George, who we'll get to in a little bit. But she has a lot of weird sexual kinks. Episode one, she masturbates with that handgun. And then there's those flashbacks with the rendezvous in hotels with random strangers that she meets on the internet. Mm-hmm. She's got issues. I think she has a lot more issues than Danny does. Danny tries to kill himself in one episode, and then he gives up. And he's like, this is not the way. And he uses those same three hibachi grills that he was trying to return in episode one. Amy's way more screwed up.
Also, yeah, Amy's big dream is to get bought out by some big corporation like Forrester, so then she can
do nothing all day and just hang out with her family.
Well, she wants to spend more time with her daughter, her husband, George, who is played by this guy, Joseph Lee.
Let's get to George now.
Whom people might recognize, he played John Cho's brother in Searching.
That's where I've seen him before.
Yeah. He's a son of a famous like Japanese American artist
like
a Noguchi type.
You mean here in this show?
Yes.
He's a lovable idiot. Yeah, he's hapless. He's old money because he's like a legacy of this renowned art family.
Right, and he's very babied by kind of his creepy mom with whom he has a creepy relationship with. He's well-connected, well-off, very handsome guy. He probably never had to work much in his life for anything. So he has this very childish quality to him. Mm-hmm.
He is part of the reason why Ali Wong wants to be seen as an accomplishment, because he doesn't have to. He doesn't have to worry about it, but she does.
Yeah, and he, as I said, he's like a stay-at-home dad. He seems to be like pretty cool with it. I mean, you get some hints of like disappointment or resentment here and there, but for the most part, he seems to be generally okay with it. I mean, did you get that sense, or did you get the sense that he was angry about it? I think people could maybe read it both ways.
I think he was too idiotic to care.
All right. I think we'll get to him when we get to later episodes. I thought he was being set up to be this like slimy kind of
thing. He's innocent all the way through.
But by the end, I thought he was a
nearly
pretty genuine
innocent.
guy.
Nearly yeah. innocent.
he was just, he's just a little dim and not very, you know, he's like,
he's a bore. And his art sucked.
I couldn't tell if it was supposed to suck or not, because, you know, it could be that, oh, this is so out there. but, you know, I don't know much about, like, you know, fine art in, you know, physical, like, sculptures and stuff. So I couldn't quite tell. But, yeah, in the end, his own mom says, like, he's not an artist. So that's pretty damning.
Let's go back to Danny's side. Let's do Paul.
Oh, okay. So Paul, I love Paul. I think everyone loves Paul. Paul is
played
just
by what's the actor's name?
Young Mazzino. That's an interesting name.
Is he Filipino? Mazzino?
I'm guessing it's Japanese, but then no Japanese person's first name is Young. You know, that's like, that sounds more like a Chinese
Korean
name.
Is he Korean Japanese? Is he Korean Filipino?
I actually have no idea.
His face is very Korean.
That is true. I feel like he has like a
is like it a stage Korean name face. Maybe?
Okay, I'll just look it up right now. But you know, when you see him, you're like, okay, so he kind of, you know, he's just gaming all day, is going to be some kind of, you know, basement dwelling loser. But then
he's set up to be a sleazeball, but he's not. He's actually,
he's definitely the best person in terms of
in Danny's crew. Yes.
Or I think overall, I can't think of anybody overall? Who's more like who's like more better than him in like in terms of character and
all right.
Morals.
Yeah, you're right. I'm going, yeah. I'm going through the list of characters in my mind, and I'm thinking,
oh shit, you're right. He is Korean American. Maybe he's like one of those like Zainichi Koreans or whatever. Because Mizino's definitely sounds like a Japan, like a Korean who grew up in Japan for various reasons.
Okay.
But anyway, yeah, he just his character is very boyish, but also more mature than a lot of others when it comes down to it.
Because he actually was
he's
the more moral
petty
one.
And insane. Yeah, because
he's
not
more moral than Danny. He's definitely more moral than Isaac. Okay, get to Isaac then. Isaac is played by David Cho.
Yeah, who
he
I
is
think,
my favorite character. He gets all the best lines.
He is essentially just playing himself.
Was surprised to see him because I've never seen him in anything scripted before, and I'm pretty sure he ad-libbed his lines because he's not doing any kind of heavy lifting here. If you've ever seen him on podcasts like Joe Rogan or David Chang's Netflix series, he sounds
like Ugly
exactly
Delicious
the same.
Or like any of Anthony Bourdain's shows because he's been on several times. Yeah, young Isaac is just a very scummy character, which is the real David Cho. So he is just kind of playing himself. And
I was most excited every time he was on screen because I knew he is the most comic relief for the whole show.
Right. And he also brings, and this is probably because, again, this is just his natural self. He does bring this kind of menace to the role. You know, he doesn't seem like you could, like, even when he's like being friendly with Danny and so, yeah, I mean, I genuinely believe this guy actually went to prison. He's probably capable of very bad things. And yeah, just because I think he's just playing to his own natural self that is conveyed.
But at the end, he wasn't that capable of it. He couldn't carry through.
He's also kind of incompetent, which is why he's stuck where he is.
Why he hangs out with Danny's crew.
And why he is also a comic relief as opposed to some like scary underworld boss. You know, he's in the end trying to run scams with rice cookers, you know, things like that.
They're all low-level scams.
Right. And I thought the whole like import-export thing, like I don't know many California Asians, but when I was in Korea, I did meet some of them. And you do meet these kind of shady types. And they're like, mm-hmm. I run a business. I do import-exporting. Like, you kind of sound like a drug dealer. I don't know what that means. But what little I know of that world, you know, this like kind of hustler Asian crowd, which is very not represented in the very, you know, well-educated.
They're the Lester Diamonds, and you see Casino. They're the Lester Diamonds of the community.
Who's Lester Diamond? I've seen Casino, but I don't know who that. I forget who that
James,
is.
James Woods.
Oh, okay.
Remember Sharon Stone's old boyfriend that she just like can't ever get rid of?
Oh, I don't. I guess I don't remember him very well.
Well, watch it again.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so who else? Jordan is played by
Maria
Bello, who we haven't seen since Coyote Ugly, and she's the token white lady in the majority Asian cast.
She's Martha Stewart, essentially. And she is has this like very obnoxious.
Not as clean cut though.
Yeah, she's like kind of like a very like Silicon Valley type of Martha Stewart. Like she is
a lesbian billionaire and she is the CEO of Forsters.
Yeah, and she has people over and makes them do shrooms and stuff like that. I don't know if Martha Stewart exactly does that, but that's definitely something that.
She's the kind of health and wellness type of person that wants to live out in the desert and do shrooms.
Mm-hmm.
Very new agey, weird stuff. She's probably into crystals.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and she.
But it turns out that she actually, in her home, she has all of these artifacts that it sounds like she got them in very shady ways.
Oh yeah, I'm sure she like stole them somehow. but she like this is the person that Amy has to suck up to because she wants to get acquired by Forrester so then she can just
it's
like
it's a $10 million buyout. Jordan right. wants to buy Amy's company for $10 yeah. million dollars, but Amy wants to do nothing all day and Jordan really wants to bring her into her inner circle and make some sort of, I don't know, girl boss out of her, someone she can hang out with. Is there some weird sexual tension between Jordan and Amy? Like Jordan has a thing for Amy?
Well, we find out that she and Naomi, who's played by Ashley Park, are like having something.
Well, that's how we know she's a lesbian.
Right. So,
okay, Naomi. Let's do Naomi then.
Yeah, so Naomi is like the... I guess the other Asian woman who's in
she's the hot one
in Jordan's life, and she's very threatened by Amy because the way that Naomi got into Jordan's life is by marrying Jordan's brother, whom we don't I think even see except for maybe in one like little cutaway scene. He's basically a non-entity, and I think by the end it's like strongly implied that Naomi and it has,
she's
has
an opportunist. She's right. A social climber, kind of a gold digger.
Right. But do you think her attraction to Jordan was real or was that her just like faking it?
I think she's faking it.
Okay.
She sees it as her chance. But I have no idea. Right, so Naomi in the beginning of the series is Jordan's sister-in-law. And then by episode 8, suddenly she's Jordan's fiance, which is revealed to the audience in almost a non sequitur.
Wait, fiance?
Yes.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, when? I must have missed that.
Amy and George have a party at their house for George's artwork, those vases he makes. Mm-hmm. And when they're doing a toast to George, Jordan says, you know, this is my former sister-in-law and now fiance.
Oh, really?
She says it just right off the bat like that, which comes off as very funny because the audience is just like, what?
Oh my God.
You almost want to rewind your Netflix 15 seconds to hear it again. Did she really say what I think she said?
Wow. Is I guess that's like legal incest in a way. You're leaving your husband for your sister-in-law?
It was meant to show that Naomi and Jordan have questionable morals.
Oh yeah, for sure. But Naomi is instantly very suspicious of Amy, and later on she's the one who really tries to expose her as the one in that road rage incident, which goes viral. Nobody knows what the identity of the people are, but I mean, we can get to that later. All right, let's just move on. So
we have one last one, Edwin.
Who's Edwin?
Edwin is the praise team leader at the Korean church.
The Justin Min character.
Danny and his crew end up attending and screwing over.
Okay, let's talk about the whole like Korean church thing because I saw a lot of people saying, "Oh, this is so accurate."
Mm-hmm.
I've never been part of that thing. My parents were never that religious. I can maybe remember a year when you know there was like some pressure for me to go to church, but it was more like a social thing. It was nothing religious at all. So I think it's like generally pretty accurate from what little information I have, but
I don't know either. It's a world that's foreign to me. Filipinos all go to Catholic church,
right? And but you know, just from things I can extrapolate from just like any kind of overly tight-knit social circle, the kind of petty jealousies and the one-upmanship.
There's always going to be drama and competition there.
Right. Honestly, I thought people were going a bit overboard about how, oh, this is so authentic. It's like,
okay, so I was thinking about all the Korean church stuff that was like a big part of the discourse early on when the show started to pick up traction. I honestly thought that it was kind of reaching, where people are just like, oh, the Korean church thing. I feel it was like, it's like people aren't, the audience, the show is so ahead of its time because the audience is still clinging to that identity thing. I feel so seen.
Yeah. I even saw like Jeff Yang saying, this is so authentic. Like, Jeff Yang, you're not even Korean. Like, what do you know about this scene? You know, it's just, it's like, I think it's just like,
it could have been a Mormon church. It could have been a Catholic church.
It could have been a WASPy golf club.
Yeah, it could be one of those like guitar mass like evangelicals with like the jumbo screens. Like, what's his guy? Joel Osteen's people. Could have been one of those. It could be anything.
I feel like I could have written those scenes.
Amish church, based, for God's sake. Based you know on, that they have drama too.
Yeah. Based on my like maybe collective year or two worth of going to a Korean church / Korean school, because a lot of times Korean school was held at like a Korean church. I could cobble together something like that. But I think people did appreciate seeing that whole scene depicted.
I just didn't think that the Korean church thing was meant to be a statement of anything.
Yeah. So
I think it
anyway,
just happened to be in there. Because it would be easy for Danny to know the people involved at the church and then be able to scam them.
Right. So, yeah. So the church is integral to the storyline because Danny has an ex-girlfriend named Veronica who's married to the
Edwin,
who's played by Justin Min, who's like a big shot. He's a big man on church there.
He's a little prick though.
Yeah, he's obviously very insecure.
He's very jealous of Danny.
Very jealous of Danny. And then Danny finds out that, because, okay, another big part. Danny's trying to get a big loan because he wants to buy land for his parents so they can come back to America. But obviously his credit history is not good. He doesn't have a lot of savings. He finds out, though, that through the church, he can get big loans and he can, you know, siphon a little money off here and there. So that's why he starts, I kind of forget why he went.
By doing fake contracting work.
Fake contracting work. I kind of forget why he goes to the church in the first place, but and now the church is a big part of their whole little scheme.
So what happened was Danny and Paul, when they had the contracting business, they were hitting up their friends to do work at their homes, and they went to Veronica and Edwin's place, and then Veronica said, why don't you guys come to the church? And then in episode 3, Danny goes and he has some sort of epiphany. It's a long close-up shot of Danny crying while they're singing that church song.
Right, right. So he obviously has like a deep
personal connection. A song that I think is pretty famous if you're in Korean church circles, but I don't know the song.
Yeah. You know, once I went to Korean church because I had like a big crush on like one of the elders there. Mm-hmm. Her name was Hannah. She used to wear these like knee-high leather boots, and I thought she was very
to
hot.
To church?
Yeah.
What kind of church did you go to?
Okay. All right. So, okay. And another big part is Amy starts catfishing Paul. I forget how it starts. I think...
She was leaving extremely bad Yelp reviews about Accho service.
Right. Because like, there's a whole thing where Danny pretends to be a helpful handyman. He pisses all over her bathroom. And the hoop is stank. That's how it all happens. And then she starts, DMing him under a fake account.
But it turns out to be Paul that is DMing her back.
Right.
Because
and
he
has
the Instagram account.
Yeah. She uses the picture of her employee named Mia, who is this younger white woman. And she makes up a fake name for her and starts DMing. I forget how it ends up being Paul's phone, but Paul kind of falls for her.
I guess he has control of the Instagram account.
Oh, right. Yeah. And then they start, texting back and forth. And
start DMing each other, and then they start talking on the phone, and then Paul.
Right, there's a critical part where Amy, she's feeling lonely. She feels, she also thinks that her husband has a thing going on with Mia, like the actual real life Mia. So
it's an emotional affair. They never did anything.
Right. And she's at, I think, Jordan's, and she's just like, And Paul's like, you know, want to FaceTime. And obviously she can't do that because, you know, he's going to know she's catfishing him. But he started talking. And I think for the first time in a long time, she feels like there's another person, especially a man mm-hmm. who's really listening to her and is really mm-hmm. curious about her. And then Paul somehow finds out that this person works at Koyo House. Mm-hmm. And he goes there, and Amy sees him coming. She's desperate to hide the real Mia, because then Mia's not gonna know what the fuck's going on. But then her cover gets blown, so she drags Paul outside and she confesses, "I've been catfishing you. I'm sorry. I've
going through a lot of things." I've never seen anyone so calm.
Who, Amy or Paul?
Paul. I've never seen anyone so calm. I think this is when we finally realize how mature and what a nice person he might
right.
be,
and then
because
he
stares at her and he listens to everything she says. And when she says, I pretended to be somebody else, I'm really screwed up, I'm really messed up," he stares at her and he kisses her.
No, before that, though, he says exactly what she needed to hear. "I think you're hotter than me." And he kisses her. And okay, so I want to talk about this thing that I see. Like, it's very subtle, I think, and you might not pick up on it if you're not Asian, but I think Amy has this complex about Asian men and white women, because you see this first, obviously, with George, her husband, whom she suspects of having a thing with Mia. Turns out that they at least had an emotional affair. I mean, if you believe what he says about not having done anything, that's all there was. But still, she's greatly upset by that. You also find out later that her father had an affair with some white lady. Mm-hmm. And I think for her, for this, you know, she's probably thinking, "I'm older. I'm this like middle-aged mom. Of course, this young, attractive Asian dude, of course, he's going to look right past me for the younger white girl." But then when Paul says, like, "No, I think you're better," I think that really gets at what one of like Amy's core insecurities. I don't know if you picked up on that.
I did not until okay. you brought it up.
And then, and I also think it's curious that, you know, in this thing that's all about Asians, you know, they don't have any of that kind of like white partner discourse that, you know, always gets involved in these things. Except there's like these little instances in which you know that they're kind of aware of this thing, but they don't quite go there. Like, for instance, when Danny is first, you know, he kind of scams his way into Amy's house and he sees the picture of George. And I think they're in like this Japanese garb. And he said, "Oh, so he's Japanese." I saw like all these people on social media saying things like, "Oh, that is so Asian American. Like, you have to be Asian American to know how taboo it is for a Korean to marry Japanese." Like, what the fuck are you talking about? Unless you're like some boomer Korean.
Who said that? I've never heard that before.
I saw some people on social media saying that. I'm like, what the fuck are you talking about? Nobody cares about that. You know what would really have ticked a real Danny off? If George were white. And we all know that. The show didn't want to go there.
He said that, though. He said, "I was so sure that she was going to be married to some rich white guy."
Right. But it's kind of like said in passing. And I thought like that, if the show really wanted to, I think, be like painfully real, George would have been white and Danny would have gotten pissed off. But I feel
how much do you want to bet that was in the script and it was edited out?
I feel like Lee Sung-jin edited it himself out. He probably like thought of it first, but I'm like, I can't see that. Or Netflix is gonna get too mad if I put that in. So I want to make
no
some commentary.
Way that these people are friends with David Cho, and none of it didn't cross any of their minds, and he didn't say it out loud.
Right, but it's like that rang very false to me. Like, no, like second generation Korean American guy gives a damn that Amy Lau would be married to a Japanese American guy. If anything, Danny would have been happy. He's like, okay, that's a plus one in my book. That she's not with some like nerdy white dude or something. Like, he would have been happy about that. He would not have been mad about that. And then there's like this other part where Danny's at some K-Town club with Paul, and I think Paul is like showing him some like Tinder matches, and Danny's like, "Oh no, you don't like, like, you gotta like marry a Korean girl, like you don't go out with the white devil." I'm like, no second generation Korean American guy
devil.
Uses that term. Like, white devil, what is this? You're like some like in like 1930s in the deep south or something. Like, nobody uses that. That also rang very false to me. If anything, they would be complaining about how like all the white girls at the club are turning them down. Like, no, nobody's like saying white devil. I was like, that just again rang very false to me. It kind of felt like this like simultaneous pandering both to like Asian women, okay, we're not going to make you uncomfortable by bringing up the WMAF thing, but Asian guys, we're not going to make you look pathetic by emphasizing the, you know, your whole anger about that. In fact, we're going to make it seem as if the real problem in your community is that too many Asian guys like Paul or Danny, they got to resist the lure of the white devil. It's like, maybe Paul's age, that's more of a thing, but no way. Danny, if he's like late 30s, like early 40s, no way in hell he's thinking like that. And then, oh, did you catch also the part? It's, I think, episode like 6 or 7 where Danny's like doing a porn search on Pornhub. He's looking up like AMWF porn. That, like, they know about this. Like, they know that this thing. So like, there's like these little things thrown here and there, but they never quite go there in addressing it. The whole like if this is about Asian American anger, especially a lot of Asian American male anger, and you're not going to talk about like the WMAF thing, I thought that was okay. Maybe it's like you're already breaking a lot of boundaries by being so explicitly angry. Maybe they're like, okay, let's do it next time, or let another person handle it. But it's like, okay, we can see where, even for things that purport to really push the boundaries, we see which boundaries are still a little too much.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I kind of lost track. Okay, so Paul is now infatuated with Amy. Amy obviously doesn't want this to blow up. I mean, because also she's got like a business to run, and she's like the face of her business. But, you know, like Paul's like trying to get with her, and it culminates in him stealing Danny's truck and going to Vegas because Amy's there.
Because Amy and Jordan are there for some, shareholders meeting?
Yeah, I think it's that, or it's some kind of like women business leaders type of meeting. I forget what exactly it was. All right, let's talk about the big sex scene between Amy and Paul. Any thoughts
that
you have
episode,
on that?
That was episode, what, 6, 7? 6?
I think that is 4 or 5.
No, because Vegas was episode 5, right?
I think it's episode 4. Because episode 5 is when Danny and Isaac are arrested.
Oh, okay. All right. Okay. Well, then they finally hook up in episode 5.
Or episode 4.
Okay.
Yeah.
No, they hook up after Vegas.
No, they hook up at Vegas. Remember,
no,
like Amy.
They don't hook up in Vegas.
No, trust me. Trust
no,
me.
No, they don't hook up in Vegas.
Yeah, they do. Because Amy.
No, they don't. They hook up at her house after Vegas.
Oh wait,
mm-mm.
You might be right.
Mm-mm.
Yeah, she invites him to her room in Vegas, but
they hang out. They smoke. They smoke weed.
They
have a good time.
All right. Yeah. No, you're right. My mistake. You're right.
She has a really, really good time with Paul because he is very childlike, and you know, he's just fun. He's fun in all the ways that George is not fun.
Yeah, and he's like totally into her. And you know, throughout Vegas, Amy has the rule like no physical touching.
Yeah, she makes him sleep on the couch.
Makes him sleep on the couch. And
they hook up after Vegas because she gets home from Vegas.
Right, right, right.
He is kicked out of Danny's apartment for stealing the truck. He's staying at his friend's house, and his friends are saying, "If you're going to stay here, you have to pay rent." And suddenly Amy texts him and says, come over. And then they hook up and he asks her for money and she breaks up with him.
Right. Doesn't he reach out to her first saying, I need a place to stay?
I don't think so.
Okay.
He knows that he can't stay with her.
Right.
He knows that she's married and has a kid at this point.
Right. So we got to go back to Vegas though, because there's a big development in Vegas. Amy Lau is giving some like girl boss speech about being able to have it all. And then Danny and Isaac happen to be walking by like the conference room, and then they see her, and then Danny just loses it. And he like says like all this stuff about
the road rage incident.
Right. The road rage incident.
The thing that started the whole thing.
Right. And nobody knows what the hell he's talking about except Naomi, who is like very keen on bringing Amy down. She starts piecing it together.
That's when she realizes that Amy was the woman in the truck.
Right, because Danny says something about a white SUV,
mm-hmm.
and then she watches the viral video and realizes it's a white SUV, and she's smart, so she puts it together. And then, so Danny and Isaac are arrested, and then they're like put under house arrest or something, because at least
Isaac is, because he's got that like low jack on his ankle.
Well, he's got the rap sheet. He's on parole, I think we forgot to mention. So he says like, the police did not believe that Dan, because like Isaac punches one of the cops or security guards. I don't know if he was actually a cop. So they don't really believe Danny was in on it. All the bad stuff goes to Isaac, who's on parole. So now he's like got that thing on his ankle, and he's kind of on a downward spiral.
He goes to church with it.
Oh yeah, he goes to church with it. And then, yeah, as you said, Paul and Amy hook up. And I thought that was just like, if I have a grudge against Ali Wong, it was that Always Be My Maybe was so sexless. I thought this scene kind of made up for it. Because I thought it was really well done.
It's all hot and sweaty.
It was just like the buildup was so good because you got the sense of both their desperation. It felt like she hadn't been fucked like good in a long, long time. Paul is this young guy who probably just wants to stick his cock in everything. And yeah, I just thought it was, you know, there's like, you know, rarely is like a movie sex scene actually like very hot. But I thought that was like, wow, that was very well done. So I saw people online talking about it being like, you know, it's kind of like trendy nowadays to be like, oh, we should ban all sex scenes from movies or other ludicrous things like that. But I saw people, even those types of people saying like, you know,
I'm one of those people.
Wait, you also think sex scenes should be banned from movies?
Or like most of them? Do you remember House of Gucci? Oh my goodness, you know how uncomfortable that is to watch?
I don't know.
You don't remember House of Gucci with Lady Gaga and Adam Driver? Remember those scenes?
I don't remember their sex scenes, but I mean, I know Adam Driver in the sex scenes in Girls, and they were absolutely hilarious and integral to the show. So I'm all for them when it's not, I guess, gross. But no, but the ones in Girls are gross, and that's the whole point. But I'm digressing. So that is. Yeah, we're like kind of like an episode 5.
This one
five.
Was necessary because they have to consummate their affair because there's a big, it's all set up and payoff. It's all actions and consequences. It comes back to bite them both later.
Right, because, you know, Danny finds out.
No. Remember, Paul, after they do it, Paul leaves the house. And what neither of them realizes is that George's mother is hiding out in the house.
She saw that?
She saw him leave. She heard the whole thing. George's mother was hiding out in their house the whole time.
Huh. Why did I remember that? Like, I remember her, like, faking being unconscious when she overhears Naomi and, you know, basically telling Amy, I know it's you in that road rage incident.
It's the entire reason why when the Echo Service boys, Isaac, Michael, and Bobby, try to rob Amy and George's house, his mother was inside the house and she got hurt, ended up in the hospital.
Oh, yeah.
I think she was hiding out in the house over the tamago chair.
Right, right. And I mean, I don't know. I don't think we have to go too much into the tamago chair.
And then
chair,
she
but
holds
like,
that over Amy, just adding to Amy's guilt about the affair with Paul.
Yeah. Yeah, that rings a bell.
And she needs something from Amy, too. She wants to borrow money. She's
right,
broke.
Because what we find out is George's father, while being a very famous artist, was also not a very good
business
money keeper, whatever. So he didn't really have a lot to give out as inheritance. So both his son and mom, or not his mom, his wife, aren't living it up really. I mean, they have priceless artifacts.
I don't know why, because since they're Asian, why doesn't the mother just move in with them? Isn't that what all Asian people do? You move your parents in with you.
Yeah, I mean, their house is certainly huge.
It's
but,
enormous.
Maybe she wants to keep up the illusion of being independently wealthy of them. Maybe she thinks
it's
a downgrade.
Yeah, I think it's on the mother's part. And she, yeah.
Certainly George would love it. I mean, there's like this weird scene in which, is he like, not naked,
he's a
but his mom.
Boy.
Right, but it's like Amy's away and then he's, I think for a second she thinks like another woman is at home. And I guess technically it's true, but it's his mom and they start having like a pillow fight. It's very creepy. It's just like, yeah. All right. So where are we? Okay. So episode wise, yeah. So you said like Paul asks Amy for some money or something. And then Amy gets pissed off and, you know, I guess, to kind of part ways
because it didn't
bitterly.
Feel real at that point. It felt, even though we know as the audience that Paul really does have genuine feelings for Amy, it does feel odd for a man to sleep with a woman and then immediately ask for money afterwards.
Right, right. Oh yeah, because he's kind of like a hustler. He always has some like brilliant like Bitcoin plan, which is obviously gonna fail.
It was a very ill-advised timing on Paul's part.
Right. And then okay, so the end of episode 5 is when Isaac's idiot friends like try to break
Michael and Bobby. Yeah.
Michael and Bobby. Why were they there again? Because Danny. Oh yeah, Danny wants to steal something, right? From Amy's
house.
He wants
to steal George's artwork.
Right, but why does he call it off again?
Because George said George was taught George and George and Danny. It's the Zane thing. It's the subplot of Zane. So Danny manages to befriend George by pretending to be some guy named Zane that they met while they were running or bicycling. And then
George is so desperate for a friend because he spends all day at home with his daughter. So he's just
cleaning,
so happy to have another adult to talk to, especially probably like another Asian dude. He's like, oh, I can relate to you.
So then they go and look at George's artwork, and Danny makes up some stuff to say about it.
He knows how to flatter George. He's like, you know, you're a creative genius, essentially. And he says, and he looks at his like dad's work, and he's like, yeah, that's not that good. You are like the true visionary. And George is just like
such a manipulator. But George falls for it.
Well, yeah, because like I guess yeah.
And then
George in turn
flatters Danny, and that's why Danny calls it off.
Right, right. I think.
But
Danny's
Isaac and Michael and Bobby, they try to rob the house anyway, and their dumbasses wear the Chosen Ones t-shirts that Isaac made.
Yeah, and then Afumi,
George's
mom.
Another play on the last name Cho, Chosen Ones.
Yeah, and Afumi is home, and then she is like knocked out or something, right? Because of the Michael and Bobby, who are the two burglars.
Well, did she try to shoot one of them, and then she fell down and hit her head?
Oh, yeah, yeah. And then, so now, like, the stakes are
even higher, right?
Are now way raised, right? Like, now
because of this episode leads directly to Isaac going back to jail.
Right, and then
For a full 8 months.
Right. Is this when the 8 months later happens?
This is when we get to episode, seven? And it says 8 months later. And now 8 months later, the episode opens with Danny and Paul now have land and a new house for their parents. And their parents are coming back from Korea to California.
Right, because Danny's scamming the church. He's like siphoning off funds.
He stole all the money that Isaac stole from the church.
Right. And
for himself. He let Isaac take the fall for the break-in. So Isaac is now in jail because Danny framed him.
Mm-hmm.
But Isaac did do it.
Right. And then...
But it's like Isaac did the break-in, but he actually went to jail for something else.
Right. And then Amy gets her... achieves her goal. She gets acquired by Forresters.
Mm-hmm.
The whole like roadblock to that thing was Jordan wanted her to stay on for another 5 years. But after that Vegas incident, Amy's like, I'm down to keep working. So now she has her big buyout. She and George have bought this vacation home.
In Ojai?
Wherever that is. I don't know where that is. And everyone seems to be at a good place. Like the Cho's are doing well. Mm-hmm. The Lao's doing well. They even have a nanny. Danny has supplanted Edwin as the praise leader at the church. And
he is now dating Esther at the church too.
Right,
he's got
a
girlfriend now.
Right. Of course, this is not going to stay happy because Isaac
by the end
returns.
Of episode 8.
Right, right.
Everything falls apart.
Right, because like Isaac comes back and now he's pissed and he now wants to kind of like take over the church scam to pay for his, I think it's like some people to pay off. He maybe has attorneys to pay off.
It's the Filipinos.
Right. But I think that's after he gets put in jail again for taking the blame for the road rage incident.
And right? Paul went to Amy and George's house and tells George that he's been having an affair with Amy.
Right, right. So, yeah. So, I mean, this is a whole series and I can't keep track of everything. That happened. Oh, yeah. That happens because okay, so at some fancy event at the Lau house.
This is Danny's, the one that I was talking about earlier. This is where it's revealed that Jordan right. and Naomi are now engaged.
Right, right, right.
So lots earlier, of changes have happened over the past 8 months.
Right. Earlier, Amy had had sent a sext of her ass to Paul. And I forget how Danny ends up with it.
Danny was looking for something to jerk off to, and he jerked off to Amy's picture, not realizing that it's her.
Right, but how did he get it in the first place? Because he must have gotten it from Paul's phone. But regardless, that's not important. He has the picture, and then at that party, like Amy's like wearing a backless dress or something. So he sees the tattoo. He recognizes it, looks through his phone, and realizes that
Kayla is Amy.
Kayla is Amy. So then he goes and tells Paul, she's just using you to get to me.
Very manipulative on Danny's part, because he didn't have to say all that.
I guess it was sort of true. I mean, it was true.
I think that Amy and Paul had a real connection there.
Oh, for sure. But, you know, the genesis of that was very underhanded. I forget why he tells Paul again.
Well, it breaks Paul's heart, and that's why he does what he did.
Yeah, but I think they were fighting at the time over something, and then he says that to really cut him down. So then Paul's really pissed off.
Paul figured out that when Edwin came to confront Danny about, like, I want in, whatever you guys are doing, construction, whatever.
Right.
I want.
So we find out that.
So Paul starts to suspect things. He goes over the books. He finds out that the accounts and the invoices and the payables, they don't reconcile. Mm-hmm. There's more money coming in than they're invoicing for.
Right. So then, we also find out like Edwin is not this like upstanding citizen. He's mean to his wife. He seems to be very willing to do shady things in business to get ahead. Like, that's the reason he goes to see Danny.
Losing in basketball.
Oh yeah, there's like this whole basketball game that goes on that he loses to Danny. And then anyway, so Paul finds out that Amy might have been using him, so he goes to their home and tells George, you know, I've been fucking your wife. And he sends George all these like texts that Amy's been sending him. And then Amy sees this because she has like some camera on her doorbell. She rushes home, but George and her daughter, I totally forgot her name, are gone. So she is now.
Is it June? Junie?
That sounds about right. Yeah. And that is. Now it's like things are really unraveling for
things
her.
Are rolling by the time we get to episode 9, because what ends up happening is Danny tries to go to George's house and talk him, try to get some information from him, ends up knocking him out, and because at this point Amy has also told George that Zane is Danny. So everyone knows who everyone is now. All the lies are coming out. Danny knocks out George, tries to drive away, only to discover that Junie is in the back of Danny's truck.
Right. So there's an Amber Alert that goes out. And to make things worse, Isaac, who'd been in jail because he took the fall.
He's out now and he wants his money back.
Yeah, he's out.
But we're
because
missing something. Remember, Danny and Paul's house burns down.
Right, right. And they suspect Amy did it.
They think that Amy did it, but really it was Danny's faulty wiring. It was
his own incompetence, because he was boasting, I like built this house myself. And then the insurance guy or like a fire marshal was like, no, some idiot, use like 14 gauge wiring on this like X volt thing.
He's the idiot.
And good for him in that he gets the insurance money, because they say if it were arson, they don't get anything. So it's good for Danny, but he can't stand taking the blame for it. So he tells Paul that it was actually Amy.
Who burned the house down.
who burned the house down. So then, so now they got Amy's daughter, and now the cops are looking for this like kidnapping thing. So
Isaac sees an opportunity to ask for ransom for Junie.
He asked for 500 grand.
That's how he can get the money to pay off the Filipinos.
Right.
And episode 9 is the climax. This is the payoff for the whole show.
Right. So Isaac calls Amy, says, you know, I want $500,000, bitch, you know, or I'm gonna murk your daughter. And then she's like, of course I'll pay.
Love this part because she starts talking about how, you know, I don't even know how to withdraw $500,000 cash. I want to give you the money, but I have to move stuff around between accounts and that could take days. And that is something that I've often thought of in movies where a ransom is needed. I'm like, how do people get the money? How does, you can't just go to an ATM. You know, you can't, most places you can't even withdraw more than what, $600 a day. So how does one come up with $500,000 cash like in a few hours or the next day?
Right.
I always wonder the same thing. And this is the first time in a show, this is the first time I've ever seen anyone say, I want to give you the money, but I don't know how.
Yeah,
so she comes up with another solution. She says that she's at Jordan Forster's house, who's a billionaire, and everything in this house is worth millions of dollars. Come here, and you could probably sell it off and make $1 million easily. You'll make it up what you owe plus some more. So he agrees
Isaac's
to
like,
it.
Yeah, they go to their house. Not a bad idea.
With the intention of putting Junie into Amy's car, doing the robbery, and then everyone just walks away.
So they
but
bring.
That's not obviously. That's not how it works out.
Right. They bring Dumb and Dumber. What's it? Bobby and Michael along.
Bobby and Michael.
And you know, at this point, you know, Isaac's no longer friends with Paul and Danny because Danny let Isaac take the fall for the.
Yeah, like he let him go to jail incident, for 7 months, and then he, for 8 months, and then he stole all of his money and built a house.
And also, Amy's the one who got Isaac out of jail, right? Because she said it was actually Danny, or I. Sorry if I'm messing up.
I actually never knew who called in that tip.
Right.
I don't know who made that phone call.
It had to have been Amy, right? Because she...
I don't know.
Well,
I never was able to figure it out.
Right. So anyway, like Isaac's in full rage mode. He you know, he's like... so he's holding them as much hostage as he's Junie driving to Jordan's house. But I think we're missing something critical because in episode 8, which is a whole like flashback to the childhood thing, we find out that Danny, when Paul was about to... I mean, Eliza, you alluded to this earlier. When Paul was applying to college, I mean, he was probably not exactly headed to Stanford or anything, but you know, he probably could have gotten into one of the UCs or
UC Irvine or something,
like that. But Danny can't stand losing Paul because we also get a flashback of Danny getting bullied in school, and then Paul, I think, kind of becomes his friend.
That could have been Paul. He was bigger than him.
No. Paul's not the one bullying him. But I'm saying when Paul was born, he latched onto him as like, you have to be my friend now because you're my brother. So I'm always going to have a friend. And you know, you see this because he's like, oh, I wish we could go to school together and be in the same grade, that kind of thing. But now the prospect of him staying at home.
Getting left behind Paul.
And Paul going off to college. He can't stand that. So he throws away Paul's paper applications. And I guess this is how Paul also never goes to college and kind of becomes who he is. And
so it turns out that Danny was always despicable.
Yeah, so Danny's he's been the one really holding Paul back, and all the things he berates Paul for being lazy and stuff, it's all kind of because of Danny. Like, yeah, if Paul's going nowhere, it's all your fault. This is gonna be important later on. So anyway, the this like crack squad of, you know, thugs, they come to Jordan's house, and you know, immediately things go wrong. There's like a whole panic room. There's a silent alarm that gets tripped. And it turns out to this chaotic shootout.
This is my favorite episode of the whole series.
I mean, it is like, yeah, a climax. You hyped it up a lot, and I was not disappointed. And then Jordan dies a miserable death because...
Oh, it's disgusting.
She and Naomi are running to that, you know, aforementioned panic room. Naomi gets there first, and Jordan's being chased by the white dude. I think he's Michael.
Michael.
And Naomi panics. in the panic room.
Hits the button to close the panic room door. Jordan is not fully through the door yet, and she gets cut in half by the door.
She gets like guillotined at the midsection by the door.
Dies pretty much instantly.
No, that's the thing. She doesn't die instantly. That's what makes it horrible. She like, because the door like slams, because it's not a blade, right? So it's going to crush her gradually. So, you know, she like survives for, you know, maybe 10 seconds-ish before she's
actually... It's one of the gnarliest deaths that we've seen.
Right. And then, you know, the police are coming and, you know, the Bobby and Isaac, they're like going down shooting. And then at the time, Paul and
Danny
have
been... You mean
Michael
and Isaac. Bobby's in the car sleeping.
All right. He gets choked, sleeper hold by Paul. And then Paul and Danny have been kind of, you know, they've been locked in this kind of garden area with high walls. And then Paul is able to get over first because Danny gives him a boost. But, you know, he can't quite pull Danny up because the wall's too tall.
And Why didn't he just take his sweater off and like?
Yeah, I saw people saying that too, but I think it's like one of those things. Like, yeah,
it
like
has to happen this way. Yeah,
you know, it's just one of those things.
We don't get our payoff with the showdown between Amy and Paul, or Amy and Danny again at the end of episode 9.
Right, right.
Back to where it all began. It started It started with a road rage incident, and it ends with a road rage incident.
Right, right. But before that, I actually really like the scene where, you know, Danny's trying to get Paul to leave him behind because he thinks like, unless Paul escapes, they're both done for. And obviously Paul's the very, you know, he's kind of, can be kind of a brat sometimes, but he is a loving brother. He's not going to leave Danny behind. So Danny comes clean and says, I'm the one who threw away college applications. And that's when Paul's like, okay, fuck you. I'm out then. So I thought that was a very, you know.
We think that Paul gets shot too, because it sounds
right,
like
right, right, right. After that, there's like this, you hear a couple of shots ring out, and Danny's like calling out to Paul, but he doesn't call back. So then, but then Danny somehow escapes, and then he gets a car,
hotwires it. Yeah.
Then he happens to pass Amy by on the road, and Amy's like, oh, hell no, you're not getting away. They both crash. They get run off the road.
They have like a very rebel without a cause kind of chicken fight. And they go over a cliff to the soundtrack of Bjork's All Is Full of Love.
Oh, okay. That's
probably one of my favorite scenes in the whole series.
Right. And then the final episode is mostly about them.
And then episode 10 gets really, really surreal.
Well, like quite literally so, because they get high on some kind
it,
of
it opens
psychedelic
with the
berries.
Crows talking to each other.
Yeah. And I thought this episode was a little drawn out. It's like, okay, they're, you know, high.
I was okay with it. I was okay with it because, it you know, this is the episode where episode 10 is the surreal episode where they have to spend 2 days in the desert together. They're both injured. Their cars are destroyed. And they're wandering around in the desert together, starving, dehydrated, both injured. And they have to now take care of each other so that they don't die.
Right. And
then
they
realize that they are soulmates. I don't know if they ever really become lovers. I know that that's implied heavily, but I think that they're more like soulmates. They have seen the worst in each other. They have seen the real people that they are. You know, only Amy knows the real Danny. Only Danny knows the real Amy, because they're the same person.
Yeah, because they eat these psychedelic berries. They're like, they're throwing up all the time. I guess it's kind of like a ayahuasca.
They're tripping. Yeah, they're tripping
trip.
Like crazy.
And they think they're going to die. So they're just like talking. Mm-hmm. Revealing everything about themselves, probably more
they
so than anybody else.
They start finishing each other's sentences.
Right. And then they almost make it up, but then George shows up and thinks Danny's kidnapped her or something and shoots Danny. But Danny doesn't die. Well, I'm pretty sure he doesn't die. But
he doesn't
he's kind
die
of the ICU.
In the very final scene. Amy is with him in the hospital. He's hooked up to all the machines. And she climbs into the hospital bed with him, and she puts her head on his chest and her arms around him. And then we hear Smashing Pumpkins mayonnaise, and the light changes, meaning days go by and she's with him every day in the hospital. And in the very, very last moment before the credits roll, his arm moves to hold her.
Oh, yeah. Okay. I didn't notice that. Good eye. But it's like, yeah, because at this point, they only have each other. Obviously, George
put a restraining order on her, so she will never see her daughter again. He's getting a divorce.
Like Amy.
Danny texted Paul, "Are you okay?" And Paul texted back, "F you, I'm blocking you."
Right. So, you know, whether it's Paul or Isaac.
Isaac is in jail like forever.
Right. I thought Isaac should have gone down bullet ridden, but
I thought he was going to do suicide by cop. I'm surprised he survived.
I don't know how he survived that, but I'm guessing they kept him around because he's going to be like a villain in the later seasons. Because it kind of made no sense. Like
seasons.
Right. But like Lee Seung-jin said, he apparently has like three seasons in mind. But
I know, but
yeah,
I don't want there to be another season. I think the way it ends, I like things to just end.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we all know season two won't be good.
Yeah, well, who knows really, right? But
this is a good season because you're never bored. It's fast paced. There is not one filler episode, which I cannot say about any other series. Even True Detective has filler episodes. And at the end of each episode, I just have to know what happens next. So I keep clicking next episode. And I enjoyed all the character development because that kind of character arc isn't something that we always see, especially in mainstream movies and shows. Definitely not Asian American TV or movies today.
So it was very well paced. I can't think of like one episode that really dragged. And because it was like, what, 30 minutes each?
The length was perfect. They're not cable hours. That's what I like about it.
And each character got enough time where you got to know them. But there's no character was like, oh God, now it's their arc. I don't really care about this. Kind of like, I don't know, something like Game of Thrones when it was like Bran's time. Like, I don't care about Bran. Let's move it along. It was never there was no sense of that. So the pace was really tight, which is nice because, you know, Netflix or any streaming, you have a tendency to get bloated. But this was very well disciplined. They're like, okay, let's keep it lean. Let's keep it sharp. Let's keep things moving. And I think that's why it worked really well.
Netflix hasn't released anything good for a while.
Yeah. I watched one episode of Wednesday and that was not good. I felt not compelled to watch that. I think the last time I binge watched any show this regard was probably Squid Game. And that was like, what, two
was
years
that
ago
Netflix?
Now? Well, it came out on Netflix. I mean, Netflix should get no credit for making that, but it did come out on Netflix. And as I said, there is that Asian spirit that lives on in Beef that is so absent in, like, say, Everything Everywhere All at Once, Crazy Rich Asians, any of the more standard Asian American stuff. So that's why I'm excited for this. It's like, okay, there is now this infusion of a new element. And I'm excited where people will go with it. I'm hoping people won't just copy this, but now it feels like there's a new lane. There's like a new lane you can go into. And it's not actually, as I said, it's not actually that new because Better Luck Tomorrow already did it. But
who would have thought that Ali Wong would be part of it too?
She's a talented woman, you know, so like you can never predict what she can do. But I thought she was very good in this role. There was like, I forget in what context, but there's like one scene where it's just like a close-up of her just talking. And remember in Pearl where there's just like a 10-minute close-up of Pearl just talking where she's like confessing that she murdered her parents or something to her best friend. And it's just uncut and you just see her kind of like gradually losing. I remember there being something similar with Amy. And I thought like
it's a very unflattering, just not just the character, but physically it's a very unflattering role for Ali Wong.
Most of the time she's in that horrible outfit with
that
the
wig.
You mean the
she's
blonde
wearing that
thing?
Wig and then she her outfits, whoever did the costume design for this show really went out to make Ali just look so frumpy.
Well, she has that weird, like, granny hat that she wears for, like, the first few episodes, right?
Where she cuts her hair off. I think it just gets worse.
And she goes blonde for a while when she's in
then
her
then she's got the bangs and the
girl
bob,
boss face,
which make her look like she's 60 years old. She looks menopausal.
Oh, no. So, yeah, I have to just say, you know, bravo, the show. I'm kind of a hater, especially when it comes to Asian American stuff. But,
oh,
you know,
you know I am. I'm the biggest
and I, you know,
too.
As I said, I did have some issues with it, mainly that, especially with the whole, like, gender relations thing, I thought it could have done that more. But besides that, it's done something that I haven't seen Asian American creative work do in quite a long time. So I want to tip my hat off to everyone involved here. And
bravo.
Yeah. So if like Everything Everywhere All at Once signals an end of a certain Asian American cultural arc, this could be the start of something new. And I think it is. It's like, okay, we've had enough with the sappy weepy stuff. I think everyone.
Yeah. No more of that sad sack stuff. No more. Right. No more identity talk. No more dating woes. No more generational trauma stuff.
Yeah, so let's just put
no more trying to get into Ivy League schools and then being really hurt when it doesn't happen. No more crushing on white people and being like it's the end of the world because they didn't notice you. No more.
Yeah, and I think what a lot of people appreciate about this is that it was respectful of just like Asian American society. Mm-hmm. It didn't try to be like
blaming it all on our culture.
No, it didn't just like pluck one or two people out and said, okay, these are your avatars and how they succeed in the more like mainstream world is what you should be rooting for as well. No, it was like, it kind of got into the grimy, not so glamorous world of just, you know, kind of like Asian American loser types. Also a higher class of Asian American loser types, you know, they're not, they're kind of in their own world. All their friends are Asian and, you know, they mostly are dating or married to other Asians. And this wasn't seen as some kind of world you had to escape from. This was just their world. That's what they knew. And people really paid attention to that and appreciated that. And not just Asians, but it's like, well, I think one of Netflix's biggest hits, definitely this year. I mean, this year is only a few months old, but I think in a long time, it's I think one of their standout series. And you know, it's not like it got a lot of hype. It doesn't have like, I mean, yeah, Ali Wong is probably the most famous person in here, but it's not like she's some
really
headliner.
Ali over Steven?
Well, Steven Yeun is a bigger name, but it's not like I think Ali Wong is more of an individual star in that she's headlined one woman shows. I mean, Steven Yeun has never been the star of like a mainstream thing. Like he's had interesting roles.
He got nominated for Best Actor.
Wasn't it Best Supporting Actor in Minari?
I thought it was Best Actor.
Oh, regardless. But that also was like a small indie film. It wasn't some big hit type of thing. It was certainly very appreciated, but you know, it was a
the
quiet
reason
film.
Nobody remembers that he was nominated for Best Actor is because that was the year that Chadwick Boseman was posthumously nominated for Best Actor.
That was also
too.
The COVID year, wasn't it?
Yes.
Yeah, that also.
The
probably...
Oscars that nobody watched.
Yeah, that was the Nomadland year, right?
It. Because I torture myself.
Oh no.
The Oscars, otherwise known as like the consolation prizes. So A24 puts out pretty much all the Asian American content worth talking about now, right?
Right. And then Tina and I, we kind of went back and forth and theorized why this is. My theory is that they're moneyballing. They are like, okay, we can't compete with Universal, Fox, Disney, but we can... So we need to get our money's worth. So what's mm-hmm. underappreciated but has a potentially large return? They're like Asian American talent.
Mm-hmm.
They're cheap. The big studios don't really want them. So we're like, you know
they've
how
got,
like
yeah,
we're like, you know how like Saw was one of the biggest like profiting movies or something of all time, or like
directed
a Blair Witch.
James
like,
Wan.
Yeah, we're like the out of all the races, we're like the Saw movies of race. We are the ones that are. Cheap to make, but can, in ratio-wise, bring in a lot of return. And A24 is certainly taking advantage of that.
Mm-hmm. They've got another one coming out, The Sympathizer. But I'm not excited about that one, but I don't know.
I don't know. I didn't really like that novel that much, so...
I have the novel, and I have not gotten around to it yet.
I'm just very not interested in Asian Americans'
takes
on Asian... wars. That's mm-hmm. why I don't particularly care about Pachinko, even though I don't think it's really
Pachinko's
about
boring. I tried to read it after our when we were on that panel together for the Baltimore mm-hmm. Book Festival, and we brought up Pachinko. I tried reading it, and I did not find it exciting, so I didn't watch the series either.
I'm much more interested in, say, something like Free Food for Millionaires, because that's actually about Asian America, as opposed to an Asian American's take on like early 20th century Korean life in Japan.
I mean, like, my whole thing is that it's got Sandra Oh in it. I don't want to watch it. I'm not impressed by her.
So I'm not really interested in Viet Thanh Nguyen's take on the Vietnam War. It's like, so yeah, I'd
give
rather
us more
him.
Fun stuff. Come on, give us one more middle brow stuff. That one sounds.
I mean, I think that's the epitome of middle brow, though.
The sympathizer sounds like it wants to be really prestigious, you know?
Right, but that is middle brow, though. Middle brow is that mainstream prestige. I think you want something more kind of lowbrow, which actually, though, is going to be more prestigious because you're going to have more artistic freedom, so you can do something cooler than your standard.
I want more of this, Oscar but I don't want a formula, and I don't want this to be remade over and over again.
You mean
beef? What are they really going to give us for season two? What? So what are they going to do? They're going to give it... Danny and Amy are now lovers, and then George is out to get them, and so is Paul, and so is Isaac.
I can't see George doing anything harmful. Like, he's probably
going
to be...
shot Danny!
Right,
he
but he's probably...
shoot Danny!
He's probably going to cry about it for the rest of his life.
If there's a season two, I will probably not tune in. I'll be honest. Mm-hmm. I'm not a season two person.
All right, so we're like almost at an hour and a half. Anything you didn't get to say that you want to say?
No, I'm good.
Yeah, I think I'm pretty good too. All right, so Liza, great talking with you. Great to come back on Plan A.
We've been trying to do this pod for a few days, but we keep having technical difficulties. So sorry to the audience that this is a little bit late.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but I'm sure a lot of people have watched it by now. I just realized we didn't even do a spoiler warning at the beginning, but...
Yes, I did.
Oh, really? Okay. For some reason, I don't remember it. All right. Okay. Thanks for tuning in, everyone, and we'll catch you next time. Bye, everyone. Bye.